Here's a fact for you. Not all synthetic motor oils are created the same. Crude oil is like a bag of mismatched rocks, all different sizes and shapes coming together. Natural gas is more like a bag of marbles, all uniform in size and shape, designed to work together, reducing friction in your engine. That's why when Pennzoil reinvented motor oil, they started with natural gas, not crude. Pennzoil synthetic base oil is 99.5% free from the impurities you'd find in crude oil. So, the next time you need to change your oil, remember to ask for Pennzoil synthetic motor oil made from natural gas. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil, based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30.
Good Tuesday. Glad you're with us. Golden Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN2. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Our phone guest joined us on the show, Pennzoil Performance Line. Mike Golick, Trey Wingo here as we get set for this massive avalanche of athletics, we think, that might be happening in sports. And suddenly, maybe Buster only had it right to begin with his 5%, 0% prediction in baseball. Well, it certainly seems like we're getting a lot of people that are going, hold up.
I think where we are now is... there was time, right? We had time. Then all of a sudden, we had even talked about it in July. This starts.
Right.
So it's becoming real. And as the decision gets closer for these, and I'm talking about the pro athletes now, I think they start to think, okay, this is now becoming real.
Yeah.
Whether it's NBA, and we'll get into all the different players in the different sports that are opting out now for COVID, for the health reasons. And I think now it's becoming real to them and saying, okay, am I going to go in this bubble for a month, for 2 months, for 2.5 to 3 months? And for baseball, am I going to start this? Am I going to get my family to, you know, in one spot? And then am I going to fly around and come back to my family? Am I going to, I'm going to think more about putting them at risk. NFL players starting to say, hey, we're 4 weeks away from camp. We need some more info out here. You know, give us something. So I think encapsulating what I'm saying is reality is starting to hit.
Right.
Is we're getting close to that time of commitment, or it's really going to happen, and you're getting more than a few guys. I think seasons are still going to start.
I agree.
But you're going to see, I think, more and more players, as players are opting out, start to think long and hard about, do I really want to start this season or restart the season, depending on the sport you're in.
Well, you've nailed it, because mentally when you approach stuff, you look at it in two ways. You look at it in theory and in practicality. And I think a lot of these plans and trying to get back because of the economics in it, and you know, everyone's wondering what's going on and going stir crazy at home. So in theory, this all sounded wonderful. But now, as you alluded to it, we're in what we call the practical application of that theory, and the virus may be throwing some wrenches into that, and people's situations are throwing sort of wrenches into that. Because right now we've got the Raptors. They're down there because they have to get down there early because of crossing the Canadian border to get going. And you have all these players that are saying, all right, this is – it's like that line from Forgetting Sarah Marshall where the two couples go to dinner. And this is actually happening.
Yeah.
We are actually doing this. Yeah. We are actually going to let this happen. And I think that Russell Brand character is for a lot of players in the NBA said, oh, we're really doing this now.
Yeah.
You know, it sounded like a really good idea. Yeah, I think so. Maybe we'll go down that road. But now they're faced with the stark reality of this is actually going to be their existence.
We'll get into the Toronto Raptors because they've been in Fort Myers. They're kind of the practice bubble in Fort Myers, and what they're doing as one player is either, and it was either Nick Nurse or one of the players that said, it feels like I'm at basketball camp.
Right.
You know, we'll tell you what's going on there. But the latest now in the NBA is Spencer Dinwiddie from the Nets tested positive. He said he isn't sure if he's going to go or not. He may go, he may not go. We all remember Wilson Chandler has opted out from the Nets.
Correct.
DeAndre Jordan has tested positive for COVID from the Nets, and he said he is out. He is not going. Now, this is a team that's sitting there ranked seventh. They aren't going to move up in those eight regular season games left. There are a ton of games behind six, I think like eight games, but they could possibly be caught from behind. You have to start wondering now, forgetting even the COVID. Well, I guess it would be there in your mind. Other players on the Nets outside of, I want to go because I want to get paid.
Right.
The thought of, we almost really didn't have a shot anyway, and now we got players out, players maybe not going to be there. My God, do I really want to go outside of the fact that I'm going to go and make the rest of my money? So hard decisions going on there for that team and others in the NBA as well. And we'll get into baseball where four players have opted out. But I really think that's what it is now. We're getting the reality of the situation, and people are thinking long and hard about their family situation, who's around them, and that if they had COVID, is this worth it even after they recover to go back down?
Weren't we like a month away now from talking about could Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant get back in time to join the Nets? Yeah. I mean, that seems like eons ago.
It really does.
But the Nets are an interesting test case, right? Because when you have a couple of players test positive, what that means going forward if, you know, this sort of becomes a spike on one certain team. And here's Woj, Adrian Wojnarowski, basically talking about that on SportsCenter.
The expectation is you were going to have positive tests for players who are just living, you know, for example, these two players, DeAndre Jordan, Spencer Dinwiddie, who are in New York, who can go into the facility, play socially distanced, kind of do a workout. They're not having contact with each other on the court. So if someone's testing positive, it's coming from outside the facility, presumably, and that's the belief here. But both players would potentially have time to get past the symptoms, get to Orlando. They don't have to play a game till July 30th. But DeAndre Jordan has already ruled himself out. And there's concern on the Nets that as they lose more players, they're going to be, as they become less competitive, that it's causing other players to wonder, is it worth me going to play? And that puts the Nets in a difficult position where they might have to suffer more attrition here before they even get to Florida.
So there's the idea of whether you can field the team you want because of COVID-19, which is a big part of the NBA situation. And then there's the other part of this, which has had, we mentioned Kyrie Irving's name a few minutes ago. Kyrie Irving was one of those people that was very adamant, along with Avery Bradley and Dwight Howard, the Lakers, saying, do we really want to go back to start playing basketball right now when there feels like there's so much positive momentum for change in this country? And we've seen it, especially from the power of college athletes.
Right.
You know, it took two college athletes to stand up and say, basically, I'm not playing for the Confederate flag. I'm on the state of Mississippi state flag. And that thing is gone. I mean, that took 2 weeks. We saw Chuba Hubbard doing that with Mike Gundy. And there's been a lot of people in the NBA who've said, listen, we want to make sure that we capitalize on this momentum we have going forward. People are finally paying attention to what we've been saying for years and years and years and years. And so we've heard that Black Lives Matter could be on the courts for the NBA restart down in Orlando. And you could have phrases or something on your jersey. J.J. Redick, the Pelicans guard, was also on SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt and talked about, listen, symbols are great, but action is what's really mattering here.
We're trying to figure out with the Players Association and with the NBA about putting forth real action. Obviously, it's been reported we're going to put Black Lives Matter on the court. There might be an option where we can wear messages on the back of our jersey other than our last name. But we all realize there's more to it than just kneeling at the anthem or putting up the Black Power sign. Like, we need real change in this country. We need actionable change. And we're working with the league and the Players Association right now in figuring out what that looks like and how we can invest in Black communities.
Listen, Jay Williams came out yesterday and said the same thing. He said, you know, the names of putting not the player's name on the back of their jersey, but Black Lives Matter or other things, saying I can't breathe and things like that. And you just heard it's good. Black Lives Matter be on the court. JJ and Jay Williams are basically saying the same thing.
Yep.
That's great. It's good to do that.
But, symbols are nice.
But there needs to be the action. And, and listen, there have been a lot of players trying to have a lot of say in the action going on. Some who are not going to play to help, and some even who are playing will still have a platform. But that needs to be just what he said, the union and the league, which is the best league as far as union and league getting along, are in constant conversation about actionable things to be done.
Yeah. JJ also said something really interesting last night on SportsCenter. Scott Van Pelt asked him about what does it feel like? And he said, it felt like when I was with the Clippers and the Donald Sterling thing happened. He said, there is real rage. There is real, and it's understandable because of the things that they've been trying to tell us for so long, people of color, about how they're perceived differently away from the court. And they just want to make sure they keep that attention going forward.
So, the overall picture of this right now, I think the theme of this show could be reality check time.
Yes, exactly.
And not just in sports. We're seeing the states like Florida, Texas, Arizona starting to close things back up again.
Arizona shut everything for 30 days.
A reality check of we opened up and did not handle it well and now have to start shutting things back down. And now the reality check again in sports, our little world of so much that is, was going to go on in July. And I do, I still think it's going to go on, yeah. But I think you may get more players than you think that are really thinking long and hard about, do I really, really want to do this? And money will be a big part of it, especially in baseball when you're talking the start of the season, even though it's 60 of 162, they're making 37% of their salary. It's still going to have some input in there, but I do think it is about reality check time because the runway is short. It's time to start lifting off and who's going to all be on board for this.
Yeah, along those lines, I got a really interesting text from an active NFL player yesterday, which you'll want to hear. It's an interesting prediction about what may happen going forward.
There's some things going on in the NFL where if I was still playing, I would have a major worry.
A lot of questions. Yeah. Well, at a different time for you,
exactly.
For sure.
Yeah, that is true.
In a different appearance. We'll get to that a little bit later. But speaking of the NFL, coming up next, an MVP is worth half a win. Half a win? We'll explain after this.
We know what Cam Newton is capable of and what he has been capable of in the past. He's getting another shot.
What better opportunity than to go to a Super Bowl contender?
Newton lands a deal with the Patriots.
By going to New England, that almost validates Cam as a quarterback. It basically says to all the other teams, you missed an opportunity here.
Newton taking to Instagram on Sunday saying, quote, I'm excited as I don't know what right now.
Back again. Did he ever really leave? He was just sort of cut.
Yeah, I mean, considering, you know, where you were in the draft, what you were as an MVP, you had a team in a Super Bowl, you had your team at 15-1 to see ya. Yeah. You're gone. And then you weren't even signed, and everybody thought Cam Newton was going to have to wait until training camp started and somebody got hurt because nobody could really work him out. All you could do is a physical.
Yeah.
And then in swoops Bill Belichick that says, physical good enough for us.
We're good.
We'll bring you in. Max deal of $7.5 million. I don't know what his number is of guaranteed. I'm sure it's a couple of million, but you know what it's not? Yeah. 25, 30 million.
Correct.
Against your cap.
And he has the chance to make that up next year if he plays well for the Patriots. So Golic and Wingo here with you. It's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. So what Adam Schefter said there I thought was very interesting. Look, if anybody had signed Cam, we'd be like, oh, okay. But the fact that it was the Patriots validates a
raises
lot of things.
Raises an eyebrow. It does.
It certainly does.
Doesn't it make – it makes you think that they all think, did I miss something here?
You know, the Bears went with Nick Foles.
Yeah,
you know?
right.
I mean, obviously, there's familiarity there. Nothing against Nick as he's a Super Bowl MVP and all that sort of stuff. But it does make you wonder, and it also makes you wonder what Vegas knows that maybe the rest of us don't, right? Because the odds went up for – the Patriots to get to have more wins on the season because of the signing of Cam Newton, but not by much.
No, it's interesting. Basically, Cam to Vegas was worth half a win and half a point.
Yeah.
So let us explain. The Patriots season win total over was 8.5.
Which, by the way, didn't you think it was ridiculously low to begin with?
Yes, I did.
There's no way the Patriots weren't going to win 8 or 9 games.
I completely agree. Yeah. And now it's at 9. So the Cam Newton signing jumped their win total by half a win.
Yeah.
The AFC East, as far as what it was, the Bills were the favorites at +105 and the Patriots were +130. Now they're evened up. They're both +120.
Yeah.
So now Vegas has basically said this is even. I give the edge to New England.
Yeah.
Because I know everybody says, well, Cam's got to win the job because he does have to learn the system. I think Cam's going to be the starting quarterback. And I think New England is a favorite in that division. Would you agree with that?
I would.
And then as far as a game, the 49ers at the Patriots, the game is October 25th. That line had been the 49ers at favored by 3. Now the 49ers are favored by 2.5. So there's your half a point situation. So were you a little surprised when you saw that? Because I guess the jury is still out on his health.
Right. That's the thing. And I think that's where Vegas is hedging their bets. And again, people understand these things are not projections. What they're doing is trying to pick a number that will get people to guess the most and bet the most on both sides. So it's not that they believe
this will
be the thing. It's funny. People still believe that, though. Oh, they should. No, they're trying to find the number. Well, they'll get the most number of bets on both sides of the equation to cover their you-know-what.
That's exactly right.
So honestly, I was surprised that the Patriots win total was so low to begin with. So that, to me, was more surprising than Cam's only worth half a game, because I think that's fair at this point. We don't know.
Don't know.
Until we see him playing, until we see him in that system, we believe there's the possibility, or I believe there's a possibility that it could work out, but you're going to need to see it.
Yeah, you are going to need to see it. And Norv Turner, who told Bill Belichick, he did tell him, he said, my whole deal is when Cam was healthy and we were with him in 2018, we were 6-2.
Yep.
Cam was having the best completion percentage of his career by far.
Yeah, it was almost 68%.
And that year it was by far. That was the exception more than the rule of him. He told, Turner also told, Albert Breaux from Sports Illustrated, just look at the tape, played his butt off. His issue was more health than anything else. And from what I understand, I don't think there is a health issue that he can't overcome. Now that's something we have to wait and see.
Correct.
Because he had the shoulder issue and
two years in a row, the shoulder.
Right. And then the foot issue. So we do have to wait and see because he likes to run. That involves your feet. And he throws, and that involves your shoulder.
That would cover it. Yeah.
So we do have to wait and see, but the dude is one hell of a good-looking athlete, big, strong guy, takes a lot of hits as well. But he was playing great that year, but unfortunately, from a completion percentage perspective, it was one part of 1 year as opposed to nine total years where, for the most part, he's been under 60% completion percentage.
So the other interesting thing is Adam Schefter and Chris Mortensen broke that story that Cam was going to the Patriots on the same day that they learned about their fines and suspensions from the filming incident. That's amazing how that happens. Schefter on his Adam Schefter podcast said there was one other team that on some level anyway checked in on Cam.
And the truth of the matter is that Cam Newton did not have any other offers from any other teams. There was nobody that was calling him and lighting up his phone trying to recruit him to a certain city. There was one other team that did have one conversation with him. It was very brief. It didn't go very far. But the Cleveland Browns did speak to Cam Newton at one point in time. But those talks never really went anywhere. They did with New England, and Cam winds up on a one-year contract with the Patriots, which makes all the sense in the world.
It's interesting, right? Because wasn't Marcus Spears the one who was on with us and said he thought about Cleveland would be a good spot for Cam?
And Dan Orlovsky said no chance. Right. Listen, I'm more on Dan's side.
Yeah.
I think from the aspect of that would mean you're almost saying you're done with Baker Mayfield.
Right.
Because if you brought Cam in there and Baker was struggling at all, the yells and screams, now again, there wouldn't be fans there, so there wouldn't be any yells and screams, to say, we need to change quarterbacks, and this would be in this guy's third year.
Yeah.
And I'm usually one to say, don't worry about anybody's feelings or anything like that. I get it. But if you've invested in this guy as the first pick, and this is his third year, and you still need to see what you have, you're going to be really tempted to yank him and put Cam in if you start to struggle. Because if you sit there and think about Cam with those weapons in Cleveland, you know, of getting Austin Hooper and having, you know, the two receivers and the running back and Chubb and what he had done, you think, wow, that's some great talent for a dangerous quarterback like that. But given that situation, they would have had to almost be completely done with Baker Mayfield.
Well, look, and then my mind goes here. The other thing, too, remember that picture of Derrick Henry next to Deion Lewis?
Yeah, yeah.
When they were both the same position.
Cam next to Baker.
I mean,
a little different, right?
There would be a major discrepancy that people would be like, huh.
Yeah.
You know?
Let's just say he is in a much better situation from head coach in Belichick to offensive coordinator Josh McDaniel and what he was doing with Tebow in Denver. And you have an athlete, a guy like Cam, to be able to do that stuff with. He is in a much, much better spot.
And it's not a knock on new head coach Kevin Stefanski.
No,
we're just
not
talking about arguably or probably the best coach in the history of the NFL. And Bill Belichick.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. And an offense that Josh can run that can morph to what you need for the guy. They're the best at being able to do that.
Yep. All right. And all that is Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. Coming up next, you know, you thought with baseball coming back, our next guy would have been a puppy upper about the whole thing. Instead, he's kind of been a doggy downer about that. However, it turns out he may be right with everything we're hearing about Major League Baseball trying to get this season started. We'll get to him after this.
Oh, just a tremendous rejoin.
Money. Golic and Wingo with you, ESPN Radio, ESPN2, presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. And we are seeing that situation that Myron Metcalf was just talking about there on the rejoin, that a lot of players in both basketball and baseball are, for a variety of reasons, deciding that, yeah, you know, I don't think this is going to work for me.
Still another month to go, July 28th for football. You wonder, we're starting to hear players saying, hey, we need some more info on the procedures and such. So you wonder if that road is going to start. Remember, this would be a whole football season. So the entire pay for some of these players, as opposed to baseball, well, it would be 37% of their pay. And basketball, we know they finished most of their season already.
Right. So, you know, we'll see what happens there. And when all of this started, there was a great piece that Darian Mel did on the radio show over the weekend. They had a bunch of analysts on as Golic and Wingo was presented by Progressive Insurance. And our phone guest joined us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. And they're giving the odds of the season starting and the season finishing. For example, Brian Windhorst of the our NBA insider, so it's 100% that the NBA season is going to start, and potentially 90% that they'll finish. And then the polar opposite of that is our next guest. Buster Olney was asked the odds that baseball season starts, and he said 5%, and the odds that they actually finish with the World Series, 0%. So without further ado, let us bring in the most pessimistic man in America, who might be proven right on a daily basis the way things are going, our fine baseball insider, Buster Olney. Buster, we've seen a spate of positive tests. A lot of people, for a variety of different reasons of baseball, have said, yeah, I'm not going down this road. Are you feeling better about those predictions, or feeling bad that you're feeling better about those predictions?
Well, and Trey, let me make clear, too, my projections are based on what I'm hearing at the team level about how this is all playing out. You know, I've heard phrases like false hustle. You know, why are we doing this? This is crazy. And a lot of it obviously is because there's of things going on that are completely outside of the control of Major League Baseball. You know, I wrote in a column the other day that for baseball to attempt to restart right now is like getting into a sailboat as you see the outer bands of a hurricane on the horizon. Because you think about, you know, the surge in numbers, about 160,000 new cases in this country over the last 4 days. And they're all centered in the most important states for Major League Baseball, Florida, Texas, Arizona, California, where so many players live. And so what I'm hearing at the team level is, great, all of these guys are going to be getting on planes to go to and report to their respective teams amid all these surging numbers. And there's a lot of curiosity and a lot of concern about what the positive test numbers are later this week.
Buster, I know that players have to be talking to one another. So what's the scuttlebutt amongst them talking with each other?
Yeah, I what I've heard from players is that players are concerned. They respect the decisions of their peers, guys like Ryan Zimmerman, we heard, Ian Desmond. You know, I do think people in the sport are wondering about Mike Trout. You know, he was out front at the outset of this when he talked about how his wife is pregnant and if it were something to be take him away from her, it wasn't something that he was going to be comfortable with. And I do think that the peer pressure will manifest itself more when the teams get together. You know, I heard that I had Jake Diekman, the relief pitcher for the Oakland Athletics, who is classified at high risk because he's had multiple surgeries for colitis. And he was flat out, there was no question, I'm going to try to play. Like he said, I want to try to win a championship. But he mentioned that the most important conversations might be players policing other players. I referenced that when conversation with officials at the team level in the next couple days. And the responses were basically, yeah, that's not going to be a factor. They feel like that with groups of 60 players with each team, it's going to be really difficult for peer pressure to fully manifest. It's not like you've got, you know, 15 guys in an NBA bubble. You've got 60 players on each team, 30 teams. The math is daunting for those at the team level.
Buster Olney with us this morning, our baseball insider. And we'll get into some of these cases. Ryan Zimmerman, Ian Desmond specifically, because he had some very interesting comments he put out there on social media in a second. But the overall transparency, Buster, that we're seeing from Major League Baseball, you know, the Texas Rangers organization, employees saying they're terrified for their safety because of so many people that have tested positive in there. What do you make of the overall transparency of everybody showing exactly all these people that have tested positive?
Yeah, and it's very interesting because you see the statements put out by individual teams, and some are specific, like we saw with the Philadelphia Phillies, where they said, okay, these are the number of players who tested positive, here's the number of staff members. Other teams were more vague, and the feedback I've gotten from players years is, look, we need to know the exact numbers. When Major League Baseball learns later this week how many players have tested positive, they owe it to the players and the employees to know exactly how many people have tested positive in every organization. I sent something out along the lines of that on Twitter the other night, and I got back from folks at the team level, basically said, look, because we're trying to honor HIPAA laws, you know, we've been instructed to be more vague. Well, you would hope and you would assume that the Players Association representing the players will go to Major League Baseball and say, look, we need to have those numbers precise and out there so that as players make this decision whether or not to participate, they have as full of context as they possibly can about how many people in each clubhouse, each organization are infected.
Buster, where is the 60-man taxi squad? Where are they? Are they wherever they live, or are they all in one spot through this whole season? Where do they go?
Golic, and you have hit on what the reason why so many people at the team level are concerned is, you know, that baseball is so much different than the NBA. You know, in the NBA, they have a theoretical bubble, and they can create a perimeter, and they know who's going in and who's going out. These teams are in baseball are gathering, but for example, if in fact they get to a regular season, they're going to, play home games. And then after the games, the players all disperse. You know, if you're the Yankees, Garrett Cole is going to go to his home. Aaron Judge is going to go to his home. And then they're around family members who've been out in the community during the course of the day. The effort to try to contain this has got to be so much greater because there's so many more portals through which players can get infected. It's exponentially more than what we're seeing in the NBA with its bubble.
Buster Olney with us. So, Buster, let's talk specifically about some of these players, including Ian Desmond, who put out some very, quite frankly, damning things on his Instagram page talking about why he's not going out there as the Rockies. A veteran says, think about it right now in baseball. We've got a labor war. We've got rampant individualism on the field. In clubhouses, we've got racist, sexist, homophobic jokes or flat-out problems. We've got cheating. We've got a minority issue from the top down. One African-American GM. Two African-American managers. Less than 8% black players. No black majority team owners. Perhaps most disheartening of all is a puzzling lack of focus on understanding how to change those numbers. A lack of focus on making baseball accessible and possible for all kids, not just those who are privileged enough to afford it. If baseball is America's pastime, maybe it's never been a more fitting one than now. What do you make of that scathing sort of evaluation of the sport he plays?
What he said is something that I've heard, especially since baseball this year went to its 5-round draft. Where, that underscored for a lot of folks at the team level, what are we doing? You know, because let's face it, baseball has become a sport where kids with money have more access to it in this country than kids who don't have money. That's just a fact. You know, a lot of the teams, the travel teams, it costs a lot of money for players to participate in that. And there are a lot of kids who simply aren't part of that. And so this year when baseball went to a 5-round draft, and on top of that, these plans to reduce the number of affiliates, what I've heard from folks at the team level is, look, that, those guys who are later round draft picks, Kevin Kiermaier, Chris Young, the longtime outfielder, Lorenzo Cain, those guys, they wouldn't have been drafted. They may not have had an opportunity to play as much. And so there is an undercurrent of conversation at the team level about how to make baseball more accessible to minorities. Theo Epstein, the president of baseball ops for the Chicago Cubs, was very outspoken about this. And I can tell you that he was so outspoken that folks with other teams were kind of upset. Like, because you talked, you put us out on an island a little bit. But he was speaking the truth about, we have to do better to bring people, minorities, into our game and to promote them. Because those numbers are the numbers in terms of how white the sport is.
Well, and we should point out that Desmond is putting his money or his livelihood where his mouth is. He's from Sarasota, Florida. He says he's not leaving baseball. I'll be right here at my old Little League. And I'm working with everyone involved to make sure we get Sarasota youth baseball back on track. It's what I can do in the scheme of so much. So this is what I'm doing. So he's basically staying in Sarasota, Florida to try and get enough more people, a more diverse group of kids involved in baseball so they can understand and maybe love the game the way he loved it.
And look, if you know Ian Desmond at all, this is the least surprising thing that he was so thoughtful in that Instagram post. He's one of the best people in the game since he got to the big leagues. He's worked to help other people. He uses platform in such a positive way. And I would encourage everyone to go to his Instagram post and read it because, again, this is someone who has, throughout his entire time in professional baseball, has worked to do good things for other people.
One thing that you know, when you were given the answer on the previous question, Buster, you said someone in baseball was a little miffed because it kind of put them on an island and put them out there. We seem to be in a year, and I know this is sports, but even outside of that, in a year, while this is a horrific year, it's a year of self-reflection, you know, kind of looking in the mirror and saying, what are we, you know, and how can we improve in certain areas? And I think it seems like Ian Desmond kind of put it together in that paragraph that he said about why he wasn't going to be playing. So after all the seriousness that we talked about, and it is damn serious, there's no doubt about that, as the baseball put out their official rule changes, please tell me, Buster, how on God's green earth players can't spit. You just let me know how a player is not going to be able to spit because it is prohibited.
Yeah, and I don't think that there's going to be spitting police down on the field because by the end
the
of Douglas
spit
might
police.
Oh my goodness, yeah. And let's face it, you know, it's through the years I've had so many conversations with players about, you know, various moments, and they'll tell you after the fact. Aaron Boone, when he hit the home run off of Tim Wakefield in the playoffs, they don't remember anything that they did when they're going around the bases. I guarantee you that if there were spit police going up to a, you know, given player after the game and said, okay, we counted you 34 times spitting, he'd be like, I don't even remember that.
Yeah.
It's part of their routine. We see guys, you know, between pitches step out of the box and adjust their gloves and, you know, spit twice for good luck over the right. Whatever it is, those are just routines. And I do think they're probably, it's going to take some time to get the players in line with it. That, you know, they might come down with a hammer if they both dugouts emptied in a brawl in terms of suspension and not maintaining social distancing. But spitting, I think they probably have a little bit more flexibility.
Buster only. We're all for spit flexibility on this show. That's one of the tenets that this show has been built on. So, Buster, with that in mind, you mentioned the name Mike Trout, and we've heard the possibility that it might be someone like Mike Trout who might not opt to play. And we had this conversation before the show began, and I wanted to get your perspective on it. There's no doubt that most people believe Mike Trout is the best player in the game, and he is. But in terms of a draw for the game, would it be significant in your mind if Mike Trout opted not to play, or would it be more significant because of the team that he plays for and the spotlight that is on him, whether it's fair or unfair, right or wrong, if someone like Aaron Judge chose not to play?
Boy, I do think that Trout would be the biggest name that in terms of withdrawing. And again, I have no information that that's the case. That would get a lot of attention to the sport. It's kind of like, you guys remember when we were going through the Astros sign-stealing stuff, and C.C. Sabathia said some things, and some other players said some things, and I know privately the Astros were kind of like, oh, yeah, well, it's only because you lost. And then Mike Trout said something, and then everyone shut up because he's a figure of such credibility within the sport. So I do think that he, generally speaking, is the leader. But I don't think the withdrawal of one or two players is necessarily going to lead to a wave. I think the biggest question, based on what I've heard from folks at the team level, is can everybody in these clubhouses or, you know, in these team groups start pulling in the same direction? You know, I think in baseball, what we've seen so far, what I've heard, is that it really reflects the conversation going on in this larger country, that there are some players who are all in on the social distancing. They're happy to wear a mask. That's part of their routine. And other players have indicated their teams, this is stupid. This is ridiculous. What are we doing? This is all, you know, this is kind of a joke. And in fact, I heard a story about one team that had some positive tests where before they got the positive test, that was the question, that there were some players in the group saying during the training, hey, you know, what are we doing? This stuff is silly. We're not maintaining social distancing is silly. And then boom, And that, to me, is going to be the big question. Can, you know, 30 different teams get 60 different players all pulling the rope in the same direction, including after games, basically living the lives of monks? That's going to be a challenge.
All right, Buster, we got to finish with this. You are bright light normally in the world of baseball on what Darian Mel has said, 5% chance the season starts, 0% chance it finishes. Are those numbers still the same in your mind, or have they gone up at all?
Yes, those are my numbers. I am, fingers crossed, I'm hoping I'm wrong. I'd be happy to come on and tell everyone that I'm wrong. But, you know, every day I make calls to folks with teams and ask how it's going, and that those projections are based on those conversations.
All right. You know, if nothing else, you're honest and you're being realistic, Buster. We appreciate that.
All right, sorry, Buster. Guys. Thank you.
See ya. Bye.
Not inviting you to my next party.
You know what, though? He's doing the thing. So I have 5%
that the season even starts.
It does seem like there's a lot more. It seems like there's a lot more hesitation from more baseball players than there is about basketball players resuming. And I get it.
Yeah.
It is totally different to try and start something. I mean, they're just beginning. Whereas at baseball, I mean, in basketball, you can say, okay, let's play these few games and then we can figure out who's going to win the damn thing.
And another big difference is baseball is traveling everywhere and basketball is in the bubble. And he talked about the spit police in baseball, that they probably won't be too strict about that.
Imagine the little armbands, yeah, and SP, spit
but,
police.
But in the NBA, they are putting out some discipline, and we put it into a social play at Golika Wingo. We want you guys to jump in on. If an NBA player gets suspended during the restart of the bubble, he will be sent to his room by Adam Silver.
He'd be put in timeout, basically. What we're basically saying, an NBA player gets suspended for a game, he's put in timeout in his hotel room.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that amazing?
That's what's happening.
Think of all you parents out there, all the things you did to your kids for a punishment. So we asked you, what other punishment should be levied against suspended players? Again, that's at Golic and Wingo. some guy at Sit Down Sports, wash their mouth out with soap if they use profanity.
I can't see wrong.
Scott says they will have to play defense.
No. Lou says they'll have to wear Knicks gear.
Oh, wow.
Lou, now you've gone too far.
Amazing.
Downgrade their overall performance in NBA 2K. Fast passes revoked.
you want to know what'll get them? Take their Wi-Fi away.
Yeah. No Xbox.
No Xbox. No video games.
They would go crazy. It's like Buster said, talking about baseball players trying to live like monks. I mean, I wonder, how long do you have to stay in your room? Like, what is the length of the suspension?
I don't know, but that is amazing. If two players get into a fight, they have to stay in the bubble, so the essential will be grounded by the NBA.
No dinner, no Dole Whip, no dessert? What?
Wow. So that's, again, we're asking, if NBA players do get suspended, they will be sent to their room by Adam Silver. What other punishment should be levied against the suspended player? It is going to be some interesting living. You see all these movies that are made where you have a bubble or a certain society that's trapped somewhere together and how they survive. We're going to get it. This would be great. I'm sure they don't, and I don't know if they will or won't, but they're going to have the media content people there for teams.
Right.
But somebody that was like filming it all, a reality show.
Oh,
that
my
this
gosh.
Could be.
There's going to be a 30 for 30 made out of this. There's no question. Because, look, I know people are saying, oh, give me a break. They're going to be at a hotel at a fancy resort at Disney World. We'd all like to do that. Yeah, but you need to understand the life these guys are used to. I'm not saying it's right or wrong.
Right.
I'm saying it is.
We are not saying feel sorry for them by any stretch of the imagination.
Not in any way, shape, or
what
form.
What we're saying is they're going to be in a different scenario and situation than what they're normal to. Yeah. So let the cameras roll on that. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, what's going on day 8, day 20, day 40, day 75, you know, when there's just the four teams left. That's what we're talking about. Nobody's saying, oh, poor NBA players. I mean, come on.
These guys are used to staying at Ritz-Carlton's and Four Seasons and then having 3 days off to play golf and do whatever in between playoff games.
Now, they are able to play golf here and able to do a little fishing if they want.
But
you
there's going to be a lot less time in between games, and the Hustle Bunnies are going to be out there.
I would know every inch of those lakes and where the bass are, that's for sure.
I would expect nothing less of you. Coming up, why the NFL may have gotten his first reality check for the 2020 season. We'll get to that next.